Hey everyone, this is Coach Nolan, and I want to welcome you back to another podcast episode of Don't Kick Your Coverage and our sponsor, thekickerzone.com. We are the only 100% series in the world dedicated solely to the high school athlete and their parents and their guardians to deal with everything good and bad in college sports recruiting, especially post-COVID and what the NCAA is doing and the lawsuits we seem to see daily. But more importantly, we want to offer some great solutions for you. So what am I doing and why am I doing this? Well, I've been dealing with the NCAA since I signed my National Letter of Intent back in 1973. Yes, I'm like 1,000 years old. And I've helped over 4,000 high school athletes and their parents in obtaining over $200 million in athletic scholarships across every major college division in the sports of baseball, basketball, football, soccer, track and field, lacrosse, wrestling, and others. You know, my goal for each podcast is to let you, the listeners, know that the task of becoming a next-level student-athlete, and yes, your parents, is not an easy one. And the NCAA is becoming less friendly to the high school athletes, especially post-COVID. Heck, I even came out of retirement to not only start this podcast, but also wrote an international best-selling book entitled College Athletic Scholarships, The Path to Recruiting Success in the New Age of NIL, the transfer portal, and post-COVID scholarships. We have many special guests on, to include former players I've coached who've made it to the next level and the professional ranks, to leading doctors and experts in the field of nutrition and physical fitness, along with parents of athletes who will be sharing their journeys to playing in college and beyond, as well as college-level coaches and other industry experts around the biggest hurdles a high school athlete will be facing trying to get into college to play the sport they love. I hope you all subscribe, like, and comment on our podcast because this really is dedicated to you and your dreams. So thanks for joining. So let's kick this podcast off. Today, we are excited to have as our guest, Mr. Chris Hixon, a former college football quarterback and Hall of Famer who focuses on helping young quarterbacks and their athletes to get to the next level and what he is now doing to help athletes. So, Chris, good afternoon, and welcome to Don't Kick Your Coverage.
Appreciate you, Mark. Great to be here.
Good, good. Hey, listen, you know, you and I have talked a couple of times as we share some football fields back and forth. And one of the questions I ask all my guests, but pretty much I think for your standpoint is, you know, why did you start on this journey of wanting to help young quarterbacks out with your National Cam Series and the QBIQ? And for those who don't know the path of what it takes to become a college quarterback and the Hall of Famer, you know, what does it take? And even a professional quarterback, what does it take? And what can you tell us about that?
Well, my path to get here, kind of interesting one. It's almost one of those paths that kind of push you in that direction, right? I was in real estate. I got out of football, got into real estate once I was done playing, right? And next thing I know is the debacle of 2008, you know, crush. And I said, well, instead of going and doing something else, I don't, you know as well as something I like obviously football, why not just go and coach some kids? So anyway, I started writing books right away. I wrote a book and started realizing I knew basically every increment to the physical needs of a quarterback. And I even devoted a chapter of my first, and I called each chapter a session. Instead of calling them chapters, I called them sessions.
There you go.
Kind of like, yeah, exactly. Just methodology. And I always thought, you know, your approach to anything is everything. And so I always wanted to be niche and different and have connection in terms of, you know, the normalcy of how somebody operates kind of creates just a vanilla connection. I always want to be different, want to create connection, want to be grooved and rooted. And I think that takes special approach. And so anyway, so in that nature, I wrote a book. One chapter was devoted to Lombardi. Why the heck did they even name it the Lombardi? I started doing research on it, found out, man, this guy is devoted on mantra, how to set up an umbrella of structure for success. And, you know, from his quotes, his different things of the 11 pillars of success, the requirement to be the either individually to be the best individual you can be, or to make your team or your company be as good as it could be. I learned so much myself when I was writing that book. And it was called the, you know, QB quarterback 101, the quarterback manual. That's what it was called. And I wrote that and instantly just started training right away. And that's how I got started. And, you know, your next question of what does it take to be the best quarterback? You know, it takes an OCD approach. Back in our day, Mark, guys didn't have all these trainers off the street, guys training every day. Here's the next step. Here's the next step. It was a lot more just you had to be a dude. You were John Wayne in the middle of the Old West on a horse, and you had right. to figure out your – it was a more free range. And you just had to be just your own guy and go be that dude. Like, I will tell you, I was the only guy that probably had the Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator was my quarterback coach. It was unbelievable. I look back at it now and how special that was. My dad put everything in front of me to be successful. And that's kind of one of the, you know, one of the, not, it's not a holdback if you don't have it, but it is definitely a helpful thing to get to be that quarterback is if you've got a great supportive staff, which most quarterbacks do, you got amazing people around you. Ooh. And my dad basically filled the buffet line. And so long as I kept eating, he kept filling it. And would put things out in front of me. He wouldn't push me. But if he saw me eating, he would keep loading that sucker up. And that's what he did. So, you know, it's a plethora of things that's going to make you who you are. For quarterback, you know, in a 30,000 foot view, that's what I would give you.
Okay. You know, it's funny because I'm sure you know that every middle school, the high school quarterback and their parents believe that they have the instant D1 material quarterback coming up. You know, whether little Johnny is just born and he's 3 months old and the dad goes, oh my God, look at the hands on him. He's going to be a quarterback, you know, to someone who all of a sudden calls you on the phone and says, hey, Coach Chris, you know, my son's 10 years old. He threw a Nerf ball, you know, 40 yards to the dog in the corner for a post pattern. And now we want to get him signed up for and spend, you know, $10,000-$15,000 with you. I'm not saying that, you know, but, you know, what do you think that your experience is of telling them, like you talk about, you know, your dad and my dad, how we did things growing up. What do you say to the parents when you first meet them and take them through your sessions, if you will, of their journey getting to the next level?
Well, there's a requirement of truth, right? There's plenty of scenarios out there where, you know, you kind of lead a guy down there, but it's a fine-edged sword, right? Because there's the sports psychology of this. Labeling a guy early is dangerous because then you limit his capability or his ceiling, his where he can project himself. And you got to be careful. Being honest though is also another fact. I mean, look at my scenario. My dad kept putting me in a, and just to bring it back to that, when I was 9 years old, ESPN says, you know, this is the best contact football camp in the country, coached by only college coaches, and NFL players would come in and do the daily clinics. And I'd be gone for 3 to 5 weeks every summer, right? And I'm coached by these amazing people, and they give you write-ups. Every week was a new camp. And I get these amazing write-ups. You're a great quarterback, this, that, and the other. Here's the things you're doing great, and here's some tips on getting better. And I would go back to my community, and they'd tell me I'm a center. And they would tell me then the next year I'm a tackle. And then the next year I'm a tight end. And all of a sudden, oh, man, you're so aggressive. You're going to be nose guard. And then, you know, and all these things. But the world's a magnet. And the more you revolve yourself around something, the more you close that gap, whether it be affirmations or complete belief. So you're working on something constantly. It brings that to you closer. So the bottom line is, you know, how this quarterback position works. Yes, you have to be truthful. Like, hey, listen, what are we trying to accomplish here? I want to make sure that, you know, the bat of truth. Also, if you say it in a certain way, you don't have to be like crazy, but like if a kid wraps the ball and comes out the side, you can instantly say that that's not D1 and let the wrap, the they call it the baseball bat of truth, right?
Yeah.
Get smacked with it. And how do you respond? I don't want to do that. I'm going to have an instant response because I know I want to be that guy. And you get the response physically in the kid to actually say, okay, I want to do the natural, purest way of, you know, making this execution of, you know, desired physical traits happen. That is helpful. At the same time, you know, if you get a guy that hasn't figured out what Army is and it's sophomore year, junior year, you got to be truthful, you know? So I've got a guy, I'm not going to name him, but he's broken all the molds I had on him. Year after year, he's broken the molds. I mean, I can't even tell you description about what he is. All I can tell you is he's in SEC football, which I never thought he'd be past D3 Ivy. And that's all I can tell. That's the most descriptive I can get on it. But I'm just going to tell you, he blew my mind away. And so don't ever limit the capability or the mind projection of where that kid sees where he can go. He somehow can and just create the streetlights, create a little bit of the gold map, and, you know, just be a part of like maybe the journey. And no matter what, he's going to get better at a faster level anyway. So anyway, it's a curveball way of answering everything, but it's a sports psychologist issue.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into some of the sports psychology side of the house, especially, you know, from the quarterback standpoint. So, you know, question is, what is your favorite part of your job, you know, as a quarterback coach and running QBIQ? And what's maybe the least favorite part of your job and not just having playing at the highest level, but like on the consulting side with the traveling that you do every week throughout this country?
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, if I told you the past 2 weeks where I've been and what I've done, I mean, it's the locations are insane. But the favorite part is having an actual leverage point on people getting better nationwide. People that I didn't even talk to because of, you know, the QBIQ program and so forth like that they get it and the significant, like, wool off the eyes are like, I didn't know that it worked like that because we all were stuck in the old evolution. I mean, today it's still taught that way. The only program out there that takes the wool off the eyes is, as far as I know, is QBIQ. And having a leverage point nationwide like that, and we're in 9 different countries. So, I mean, it's worldwide really. Mm. And to me is significant. Leaving the game better than I picked it up at and having some leverage point in that, it's that motivates me. And I love, so the endurance that it requires to travel so much, things like that make it where it's doable. And I love it. The things I don't like is not having enough time. And like, if I could have more time, like my bandwidth is so low. So it's the ability to really like get in with that one individual that could use me more and see him do different. And that part of it's challenging because the early stages, and Mark, you know this, I mean, from training, the early stages is like, yeah, you got plenty of time. You got your six clients. You got 6 days you work.
Right.
And so you can devote and just make these major deals. So I don't know, man. To me, that's frustrating. Is time, because you know, if I just had time to just devote to this one guy in this project, I know it can make a huge difference. And that's probably the biggest challenge. But outside that, I mean, like, listen, the system and the way it's created is it helps that time scenario, because I make videos where they can hear me. Rep right. over rep, you know, this right. paragraph means this. This is how you install it. This is the way you should see it. You know, you install that matrix of football and how it works. So, I mean, I've tried to accomplish or take away from the broadband issue, or bandwidth issue. Anyway, yeah, those are my.
That sounds like, you know, one of the things, like, it's like your on demand model, you know, is really what's helping you be more of that specialist coach. Like I tried that, you know, I did the on-demand model for biometrics back in 2011. You know, I was doing videos with biometrics and drawing lines and having, you know, people's having my voice on there, all that kind of stuff. That was great, But it was so time consuming, Chris, that I just didn't have the time to do it. I was like, you know, it takes me 3 hours to do four videos, you know, back and forth, putting on them. Like, I could have like five lessons in by that time. I'm not going to do it anymore. It's crazy. And the, unfortunately, a lot of the kids really didn't like the biometrics. The parents loved it. I loved it because it had the voice associated with it and it had the mechanics behind it. But it wasn't me. And I'm not a video on demand kind of a guy. I'm a one-on-one person. You know, I like being out there. I like seeing the ball coming at me. I like seeing the spin of the laces when I'm holding it down, those kind of things. And I think that to your point, it is one of the problems when we don't have that bandwidth of time. But it's a good problem to have, I would imagine, right? Especially since you're doing business-wise. Yeah. So let's get to the mental side. You know, in just about every sport that you and I have played throughout our lives, we've always had a mental aspect of the game. So what is the one part of the game that maybe you hear experts talk about on the mental side that you either agree with or disagree with, especially in the role of a quarterback?
Well, I'll give you one specific that came up here lately. With the Tom Brady and Steve Young podcast, you know, Tom Brady said, you know, I don't get it. You know, these days, it seems like we have these quarterbacks that come to the line of scrimmage and they look at the defense. They say they know what the defense is in. And this literally is what QBIQ is predicated on. They say, and certainly I know they probably know the defense, but they still run the play. And the play is not very good for that particular defense with the situation that's up. And they drop back and it doesn't work well. And they run, pick up like 4 or 5 yards from running. And this is the quote of what he's saying. And the announcer was like, you know, great job. That was a great play. And, you know, from a statistical standpoint, we're sitting there saying, you know, from, you know, our position, a quarterback or a guy who should know what's happening in front of him. Why'd you even snap the ball? Why'd you snap the ball? Why didn't you audible to a situation that was going to be able to put your athletes in a better situation to be successful per your needs for situation, per that defense? And it's like, why'd we even snap the ball? So the educational scenario of how we're progressing and evolving as a quarterback and as a industry, the quarterbacks we're producing, I think is at a poor level, but I always think it's been a poor level because it's, you know, it's key defender read and progression based reads, which are important, but they're not the key end all be all about being a fast reader and a fast decision maker. So anyway, that to me is probably the big frustration point of the industry and the quarterback world and the mental side is how prepared are we mentally to make the, you know, I always ask my guys, you know, at what point is the information offered at its earliest to make the right decision fast? You know,
and they don't have a lot of time to make that decision sometimes, right? Especially if they're calling audibles. And, you know, you got, I think the game itself is getting to be audible driven. You know, I mean, everything you do, you got the guy standing up, look at the sidelines. You know, then the guy on the sidelines calling up to the box. The guy on the box is calling somebody else to look at the lip reader in the corner and making sure you can't read the guy's lips, all those kind of things, right?
Right, Mark. It's off the sideline. It's not the quarterback. They're decapitating.
Yes.
Literally decapitating the quarterback from he's now just an operational guy. Yes or no, sir.
Yes.
It's not, you know, it's instead of give me the keys to the car. But whoa, you can't give me the keys to the car because you haven't trained my brain to think like you.
Exactly.
That so it's in our educational scenario, and that's what I'm all about is providing the keys in the brain to wire the brain for the fastest, most fluid processing scenario. No matter how many bullets are flying, how crazy the scenario, I'm still fluid in the mind.
And so to your point on the mental side of that, you know, do you think it's a mental issue or a physical issue? I mean, do we have to be more, you know, ADD as athletes these days, or OCC? I call ADD, I call it a superpower because I had that growing up, man. I was like, if they had a milk carton for ADD, that was me growing up, you know? Yeah. But nowadays it seems like we're throwing so much at these young kids, right? That they're in overload of information And I'm not sure how much they, how well they handle it at a 16 or 17 year old level person.
I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with that. I think the offense is, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I put it like this. But how well am I NFL trained if I'm running the triple option? Just think about this. So I'm reading three technique on the fullback. I go out and now I'm reading the outside edge or even the linebacker, depending on what the blocking scheme is. And then I'm making those decisions. Am I NFL playbook ready? Reading that? No, because that's one player to one player. That's key defender read. That's what they always taught us. And so we're debilitated. Well, what are we teaching now? What's the RPO? What's the read option? The RO. It's all the same thing. Now I'm just reading that guy and that guy. It's the same thing. I'm decapitating availability to progress mentally. I'm making players not just be able to mentally hit their ceilings. That's right. The bottom line. I hate to say it. Right. Now, I will say this. It's important. Don't get me wrong. Offenses currently, it's an easy advantage to have success by calling those plays, because you're simply taking a player. You don't have to block them. You're taking them out of the play by decision. So now it's 10 on 11 or 9 on 11, right? And it gives you the advantage. So I get it. I understand it. But you're also hurting the player for later in the NFL game.
Right. And that's very true. It's almost like, you know, like all the high schools I've been associated with over the years, you know, the feeder program has always been the best thing. I think the feeder program is always great. If you have a great feeder program for a kid that's in sixth, seventh, eighth grade, by the time they get to be a freshman year, if the high school coach stays there in that program, I mean, like Marist, for instance, you know, Alan, Coach Chowick, who's been there since Christ was a corporal, you know, he's going to run that same offense, right?
No doubt.
You know, he's going to run that same offense. And, you know, if you're at Blessed Trinity or if you're at Lassiter or wherever you're going to bleed, you're going to run the same offense kind of back and forth. So if you, in those scenarios, you know, one thing we never call an audible on is a kicker. You know, like I've never seen Harrison Buckner take a step back, look over the corner of the sidelines and go, "Hey coach, audible here?" No, just kick the friggin' ball through the uprights and call it a day, right?
Yeah.
So how do you handle that? Or do you handle that when you're talking to college quarterback or high school quarterback coaches? Maybe sometimes a parent will say, "Hey, Chris, would you mind talking to Coach Dingleberry over here about our offense?" What do you say when those conversations happen at all?
So typically that doesn't happen. That's a very, very low percentage conversation request, right? But it does happen. And I'll have those conversations. It's not the most receptive. If you have somebody intermediate outside the coach's dojo, I mean, it's the coach's dojo. He only allows certain people in that dojo. And typically it's nobody that's called a consultant or some trainer, right? So all of a sudden, you know, there's this weird outside, you know, talking point. So what I try to do is I try to prepare my guys in such a way that mentally they're the smartest guy on the team. Typically they'll be smarter than the coach. They won't be as game plan smart, right? Obviously the OC is going to be game plan smart. But in terms of knowing what works and how to make faster decisions than anybody else in the world, what hopefully we create is where the coach notices it. And if he notices it, he starts providing a little more keys, like the set of janitor keys. Hey, here's another key to put on your set for another door. And he's got the full set to the whole city, right? So and that's it. And you have to gain trust from the OC in that way. And we also have to be careful about how, because we are the smartest guy in the room at that point, and we've got to be worried about, you can't ever, the way you say things, you got to almost be a politician, the way you say things, so you don't alienate. Hey, that doesn't work. You can't be like that,
right,
to your coach,
right,
you know what I mean?
Right. There's, yeah.
You got to like cradle the situation. So that's what I try to prepare my guys. But that's the whole point, is when you go through if I have hands on to like a guy, he'll be the smartest guy in the room, no doubt. And I also obviously coach him how to handle that level of intelligence. You don't want to alienate.
Right. I got that. So if you had this, let's say you had the attention of the whole you know, athletic youth sports world for 5 minutes. And what would you say to them? Generally speaking, you've been, you know, you've run the gamut, right? From high school to college to the professional, and now being, having your own company and doing the things you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, what would you say to them? What would you say to them? And in my experience is, you know, this really is a global question. You're in 9 countries. So I'm sure you see how people do things here in the States compared to, say, Germany or Brazil. So how do you handle those things when it comes to both the parent side of the house and the athlete side of the house?
Man, the 5 minute conversation on that.
Yeah.
The soapbox on that is this. Let me talk to the coach, because, you know, we go around and we do consultations with coaches all over the nation. And the guys that accept it, the guys who understand, they're like, wait a minute, let me learn more. We already, Mark, us as coaching staffs, like across the country, we already go to conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Why not bring the convention to you?
You're right.
You're going to go listen to that guy. Bring the convention to you, and let's talk about your team and how you do things and what the QBIQ lens will do for you, how you can see it and make faster decisions, even be a more clear and perfect play caller, and get the quarterback and everybody else to understand, why are you calling that play in this situation? First, what expected defense? If you can get your guys to understand that, the speed of what your offense will operate out in accuracy and execution level percentage-wise, you'll be off the charts, through the roof. And if they could understand that, like, just look at, like, some of the teams that have already put it in. One team put it in, and they were 0-4. They finished 5. This is a college. They finished 5-1. They went from,
wow,
I think it was 20 or 19%. Third down efficiency to 39% efficiency.
Wow, that's twice.
Exactly. I mean, they ended up crushing it, like 13 and a half points a game to like 40 points a game.
Ooh.
And all it was, clarity of how you coach and getting those guys to think why you call plays. Also, getting the horse blinders off, go routes and things like that. Getting, love your check down. And here's the big thing. When they understand how I present it, I make it where it's super, super simple. If everybody understands there's 7 downs and distances, and 5 out of those 7 are the same goal, 4 to 6 yards. Why? Because you want a great third down. And if once they understand the matrix behind that and how that works and why, then the quarterback's going to be like, oh, beep, bop, boop, and we're always in a good third down. We have great efficiency, and we're going to get first downs. And a stat for the NFL that I really, really love. In 2016, there was 19,105 throws. There was over 14,500 of those were under 9 yards. That's over 76% of them. We're not even talking about deep. We're talking about 10 yards and above. Mm-hmm. It's always, the battle will always be about third down efficiency. Put yourself in a great third down, and we get it, but what's the science behind that? The kid doesn't understand the why enough. And it's in our clarity of message, why we call the play. And if he understands that, he will execute for you way better. And that's why that team got so much better. And my favorite stat, Mark, of all, they went from 60 yards rushing to 240 yards rushing.
Holy cow.
Now, and people are like, I thought this is a passing thing. No, no. It's about your playbook being completely wide open because you're always in a great situation. And that's what QBIQ is about. By the way, their passing went from only 209 to 241. But think about that. 241 yards passing, 240 yards running, the perfectly balanced offense.
Right.
That's what it created.
Right. And you know, it's funny because you also look at field position as you're dealing with the third downs, right? You have a third down and long, and I'm playing field position wise. I got to worry about, hey, am I going to have to punt the ball? Am I going to go for a field goal? Or what are my percentages going that way? So you're exactly right. It's a mentality that you have to be able to say. But when you bring data behind this, I love data. I'm a data freak. And I think the more data you have, the less emotional responses you have to deal with, you know, I think from the coaching staff and from the players and from others. So, you know, if you had it, here's an easy one though for you. If you had a gigantic billboard anywhere on it, metaphorically speaking, you know, and getting a message out to the millions or even billions of folks, what would it say and why?
It would say average is free. being good comes from average effort, but being great comes from what nobody else is willing to do.
It's a great billboard.
I don't care what industry, what you're doing, but if you find yourself doing common things that everybody else is doing, how would you ever expect extraordinary results? Unless your map and how you've been executing to get yourself to where you are now or where you're heading isn't extraordinary. That's why we call it island work, very alone work. If you're doing things that, if your goal is to be this crazy, the best in the world, not everybody can be that. That means you have to have the best in the world map. Mm-hmm. Mark, if you and I were pirates, bro, how good of pirates would we be if we didn't have a treasure map?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we would be pirates.
We'd be the worst. We go out of business. You have to have your treasure map, bro. And that's what my job is, to create the most accurate treasure map for you to hit your goal. That's what my job is.
That's awesome. And you know what? It's almost like you got to burn the boats along with that. You know, once you get that treasure map, then you got to burn the boats. And
exactly.
Sometimes it's like you're trying to get across to the parents and the players. You have to understand what that means. You have to understand what burning that boat means. Like I put out a couple of times. Hey, look,
there's no retreat.
There's no retreat.
Not available.
Not available. I mean, but if you have that retreat mentality, you know, oh, well, you know, he could have done better, but don't worry about it. He did okay today. Well, if you want to be okay, then you got the wrong coach, because I'm not an okay coach. You know, you have to be, like we said, there's 32 slots in the NFL as kickers and punters, right? We don't have five kickers and punters on a football team, right? You know, right. So it's changed the dynamics. So you had one quote.
And their careers are longer in heck.
Longer, hey. And we're using it, the best looking women. I said that kiddingly. The one,
what?
One guy one time. Yeah, we don't get hurt as much, right? So, oh, you know, who wants to go out with, you know, a ratty old quarterback, his arms in a sling, and it's Friday night, wants to go to the Waffle House, you know, hey, you know, got your rotator cuff going on and Tommy John, whatever else you got, labrum. So are there any quotes that you really think about or live by, or even have in your role, that you inspire the guys you work with, guys and gals, I guess, that you work with?
Well, the one I mentioned for sure, I wrote that back in, it was probably around 2010, 11. Another one I think that's really important, your approach to anything is everything. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like stuff doesn't happen by lightning strikes, things that you want, right? It happens from a prepared process, right? So, okay, what do I want? Well, what's the map to that? How am I going to design myself to get to that? And so your approach, how are you going to, you know, draw out the map, how you're going to execute every step and go through that process, is what's going to predict or depict whether or not you get your goal that you want. Your approach to anything is everything.
And that's true. I mean, I think that sets an example up for, as you have that approach, whether it's in sports and life or how you get up in the morning and do the things you got to do, you have to have that approach. You have to show up with the understanding that I'm going to approach today like it's the last day I'm going to play football. Because someday it's going to happen like that.
Yeah.
Someday that day is going to come. And then what do you do? And I think so many kids don't look at it that way. They don't look at that approach of like, oh, I'm just gonna show up today. I got practice. I'm coming up today for practice. I'm just gonna hang out and work for an hour and a half and then call it a day. I think the approach, like you said, Chris, is so important to the young kids' mental and physical approach to the game.
Here, Bart, here's a great one. Think about this. So you and I are on the team, and coach gives us the workout for the day, right? You know, the weight room guy, he hands us our workout. We got this many sets, this many reps, got the program, all that kind of stuff. And then I go through it and I crush it. Literally, you know, whatever it is, I crush it. I motored through it. And I was asking my guy, so did I kill it? Did I just crush it? And they'll be like, yeah. I mean, from how you said the story, yes. I said, but wait a minute. Didn't everybody get the same reps and same sets, the expected methodology or whatever it was, chemistry for you to, you know, your program? And they're like, yeah. And I said, okay, so technically, wouldn't that be just called average for what average. Your team's standard is?
Yeah.
So really, you're just doing average work. If you don't have a rule, whether it be the 10% rule, your coach says, here's what you guys are doing. And you just say, every time there's sets and reps, I always add one. So I always do an extra rep, whatever it is. That right there is probably the 10% rule, right? If you have like, whatever, you start out at 10 reps, 8 reps, 6 reps, and go down, whatever it is, you always add a rep. That's your 10% rule. If you can say that, that means you're getting 10% better and it's compounding over time. And if you add enough of that up, people can't compete with somebody who has a higher standard and they commit to it daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly. Your approach to anything is everything. And if that's your approach, you'll be better than that average that coach is asking for.
Amen. I mean, amen. Attitude is key to that. I mean, I think if you walk in with going, hey, I'm going to do 10% less than everybody else, you never hear that. You know, hey, I'll just do 10% less. I mean, sometimes you do, I guess, but then they're not the ones who want to get to that next level a lot of times. So, you know, we talk about things that are sometimes habits that we do. Was there a habit that you did as a quarterback or even like in life right now that has set you apart from everything you do every day? Is there one thing like, you know, do you wake up beside the bed in the morning and put your socks on the same way? Or is there just a sort of habit of how you train kids that makes you a better coach?
Being different for sure. Like I'll give you an example of when I was playing. My kids were living in Florida. I was in Georgia at the time. And I would every time I went to go see them, it was basically almost every weekend. I would drive at night. So at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whenever that was. And the reason for that was OCD wise, I could not handle it because I'm still trying to like make sure nobody comes and takes my check, my position, right? Because it's all about money. No one's stealing my job.
Yeah.
If I don't have every opportunity at working to keep my check, then that's going to cause me a problem. So I traveled at night because I couldn't handle thinking that somebody else was going to be able to outwork me. So it's, again, that approach, that weird way of thinking, the OCD, that was weird for sure.
Yeah, that worked for you. It worked for you. It kept you focused, right?
Yeah, it kept me focused and just a constant weird thought like that is obviously going to drive you different, right?
Right.
And you got to think, are you driven different than the normal, you know, guy who plays high school or college or whatever? Are you different? And if you can see weird quirks like that, you're different.
Yeah. And I kind of like those, you know, weird quirks because you want to sometimes set yourself apart from the masses. Right. I mean, that's the cool thing about it. So, you know, here's one thing for you. So how is a failure or maybe an apparent failure in your life, whether as a quarterback growing up, or whatever was doing, how has that set you up for future success? And do you have a favorite failure in mind that you want to talk about?
It's a great question. Well, as quarterbacks, we have short-term memory. I don't remember all the picks, but I'll try to dig something up here that was a failure.
Of course not.
Well, I tell you, there was this one quarterback. He was the best thrower in the country. And it was funny, you know, the world said, you know, his community said he wasn't. He hadn't started in 3 years. He came to me and I saw him and I was like, you're top 10, bro. He was a little rough. And I said, let me shape you out a little bit. Ooh. He certainly didn't see him as that. He didn't see himself as that at all. And it's funny, he was playing baseball at the time. And so because he was playing baseball, the dad didn't want to overstress his arm. So he came to me for mental coaching, learn the game. So classes. And so we did that, but I used football as a vehicle to change his mind. So kind of like the same scenario I went through, I had to go to Pennsylvania from either Washington or California or Texas or wherever I was living to go and figure out, hey, these college coaches are telling me I'm awesome. Even though my boys club football team is telling me I'm not, you know?
Right.
And so that kept me feeding. Right. It took me like 7 years, 6 years to finally get the position. Anyway, so same thing here. He would leave from his part of town over to mine, and I would use the classes, football, as keying in to rewiring his brain and how he thought about things. And I got a great article. I'll send it to you on somebody in LinkedIn said, hey, what's your favorite story? And I actually wrote this long diatribe story on this. And I sent it back to him. And I put it in one of my newsletters. But he ended up, the long and short of it is this. Once I got him right, there was a guy in the area that has every single head coach in the country on his Rolodex, his phone number. And he was also a Florida alum. And Tim Tebow had just graduated.
Mm.
And I think Brantley was the next guy coming. And okay. I said, I called him up. And once I physically had him where I wanted to be, and I was already changing his mind. And because he started throwing with me, it took me like a month to get him right. And next thing you know, I texted him. I said, hey, I got a guy that is better than your kid, Brantley. And they said Brantley was going to be better than Tebow. I don't even remember the early report.
Yes.
And so he goes, no way. And I said, come over. Where are you? Because he lived in the Marietta area. He came over and he watched him throw. And he goes, oh, my God, you're right. And he goes, hey, give me a minute. Let me call you back. He literally called me within 10 minutes. He goes, can this guy be to Florida, University of Florida, within, you know, this weekend? It was this week. And I said to his dad, I said, hey, I leaned over because he was sitting right there. I said, can you guys be to Florida? He goes, what? Are you serious? I go, yeah, you're being invited for a one-day workout. Mm. And so anyway, he went down there, and Nussmeier was like calling him, oh man, this guy he's Carson Palmer Jr. He got invited to Friday Night Lights, 250 of the best players in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And he was only a rising junior. That is reserved for only rising seniors. Wow. This guy hasn't started in his community for 3 years. Now you ask me what's the disappointing part of it. Just trust me. It was unbelievable. Like that guy figured out he was actually in control of everything, not his community. And it was a beautiful thing. Then all of a sudden we learned that, and I learned I had to ask a lot more questions. There were some, you know, educational issues. He wasn't NCAA verified.
Mm.
And anyway, and Coach Ross Newton totally helped us out with that because nobody knew until Ross hooked, you know, went in there and said, hey, and we ended up getting him verified prior, but after signing day, which means there's no scholarship stuff. He goes to a JUCO. He leads the nation in JUCO. And anyway, that part of it to me, because that's called an off-ramp, that part of it to me was my biggest disappointment, not being in full understanding of the complete situation.
Yeah, and I see that a lot, you know, when I see that a lot with process, and this is where the next question really leads into what you just talked about. You know, in the last 5 years, now post-COVID, you know, what has changed from what you see post-COVID to where it was 5 years ago? And what do you see moving forward now with all the things happening, not just as a coach yourself, as a coach and a consultant and someone working with these young men and women in the quarterback spot, but is there something else that you think that high school athletes and parents, especially quarterbacks, need to know about post-COVID that you think is helpful to them?
I'm going to leave that question out. I'll leave it with a simple answer, and I'll just say, don't be a sheep.
Okay. That's all I got. That's good. That's good. That's a good answer. So when would you tell parents and high school quarterbacks and other players to get in the proper game of, you know, really the mental side of the game as they go forward?
Oh, well, the mental, yeah, okay. So the mental side of the game, and there's multiple ways to attack the mental side of the game, right? I mean, there's obviously confidence. There's all these different points about the mental side. Your mental preparation and just doing film watch and all those natural things. But like what we're basically focused on is how do you understand the game? Like an example is the, I can't say who it was, but it was an offense coordinator in the state of Texas. He asked me, he goes, all right, hitting it off season, how would you train? How would you go about this concept? And I went into the four steps of evolution of quarterback. And once I got to the fourth evolution, I said, therefore my thesis, I wouldn't train the concept. I would train defense. If you train the matrix first, than how I watch film from now on for the rest of my life. If a coach hands me a new concept, I already know how it's going to work. Done. Do it the IQ way, the QBIQ way. And you make, it's almost like you teach a guy to fish. He can feed him and his family forever.
Right. And so, as we move from, the winter days of training and now getting into spring ball and the summer training, what various strength conditioning things do you like to talk about with working with the quarterbacks and the other guys that are on the team as well?
Yeah. Core rotational power, and I'll leave it at that. This is outside of core rotational power and using med balls against wall and all that. I just want guys to understand this, because this is the greatest understanding of, if they short stride their step, they'll understand what I mean. If you short stride, you can rotate on it and have better ground force. Because if you overstride, you're not going to have great hips and great leverage. Now, and a great way of understanding that, if I were to punch a bag, right? If I were to be leveraged, like punch a bag, and I was on one leg. So now I'm on one leg right now. It's hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have no force behind it. But if I put my fist into the bag and I'm connected to the ground back there, and you can feel that connection of ground force leveraged into that hip and through your arm into that bag, then you all of a sudden you understand what driving a ball is. So when you think about, this core rotational, this sequencing of body requirements to throw a great ball, how do you create that? What is the footwork that goes into that? And then how in a functional world go into a weight room and recreate movements that do that? Whether right. it be, the upward or downward chucks, where the straps up there, you're going down sideways mm-hmm. chucks, upward chucks from if you have one of the bands that can start either up there, here, and down there. Core rotational power for us, that's important, and having 2 feet on the ground. That's so you can leverage a hip, drive a throw from your hip. That's what you want to rehearse.
Yeah, we talk a lot about, FMS. I'm a big functional movement screening kind of a person, so I love Greg Cooks. All the work he's done I've probably been following him for the last 17 or 18 years, just getting yourself grounded or having a core around you, whether it's a quarterback job, a lineman's job, a kicker's job, having some core beliefs that you believe are a mainstay to your success, not just short term, but longer term, because we look at the physical health that we all get to in our 40s and 50s and 60s. And a lot of that time it comes from how we prepared as athletes when we were growing up. So, here's, I guess, the last one or two questions. So what's next on the horizon that you are really, really super excited about and want to share with our audience today?
Well, I think it's two things. One is the QBIQ training camp, which you have to experience it to understand it. But from a quarterback wide receiver standpoint, the full picture of how QBIQ works, what we get done in those five practices, five meetings, it's five classes, five walkthroughs, and five practices.
Okay.
What we get done by the end of the weekend, there's Power Five offensive coordinators that Tony Rasiopi and I talked to, and they're like, there's no way you got that done in that time frame. We can't even get that done in 2 years. That didn't even happen. Wow. So, but again, it's a brand new evolution. Why would anybody know the power of it if they've never experienced it, right? And so that's the challenge is football's old heads, and old heads are hard to move, right? Bunch of mm-hmm. old guys that know how they've done football for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my challenge. That's my big challenge. And the other thing is the consulting, the quarterback or the going around and coaching teams, coaching staffs. The eyes, when you see the eyes of the coaches, when they're like, all right,
I get it.
I know exactly how this is going to turn out. And it changes like your stats and what's going to happen. It changes everything. So those are the two things that I'm excited about.
Do you have, from the excitement standpoint, do you see that is really what's been changing your life, is that the eyes open, the aha moment, they're now getting this, And some of the coaches are getting younger now, right? We've got NFL coaches that are in their 30s. You know, a pair, you know, supposedly when in the old days you had to be 170 to get in to be a coach, right? So,
or yeah, exactly.
So I mean, I guess probably that's where some of the things are coming in right now, right? Is that you're excited that there's new coaches that are coming in and there's new ways of doing things that are helping, you know, kids and their parents get better, right?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I think there's somewhat of some evolution happening, not fast enough. But that there again, they're all within constraints. The new evolution actually for those guys is actually going back and picking up some blocking schemes and using some single wing, like what McDaniel's doing. And it's funny, but what we have to offer is actually a brand new scenario of giving the guy a more understanding of how football works. Because put it this way, and this is the bottom line statement. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, those guys certainly are not using old evolution of how to quarterback and make decisions. They're using a cheat code, and QBIQ technically is what they're using, except I've never coached them on it. They were forced by a couple things. If you and I are making some food, and here's the ingredients. One, those are the most competitive people in the world in our industry ever, okay? Number two is they want to be the best in the world. So now they're going to use their God-given assets, which is not to create extra time and run around. They're going to say, well, for me to be great, I'm going to have to figure out a way to read faster, take in more information, and make decisions faster than anybody on earth. What are they using? Do you think they're really going through check one, check two, check three, check four? No. They're using the matrix of football to cut dudes out from a pre-snap standpoint and get to the right guy faster. That's what we're all predicated on. And that's where the gold mine is.
Wow. That certainly is. You talk about the gold mine. That changes the philosophies, and it probably shortens the bandwidth of how long a kid gets confused or how many plays a coach has to put into the system. Would that be accurate?
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. Well, okay. I mean, the simplicity is I can put anything in front of him and he's going to know how to operate it because he understands the matrix of how football works.
Okay. So last question or last two, you know, where can people go to learn more about your company and what you guys are doing at QBIQ?
Well, pretty much anything on social, QBIQ system. And then obviously the website is QBIQsystem.com. Mm-hmm. Those are the two.
Okay. And then, what is one final thought today that you want to leave our listeners with?
Ooh, man, if this is what you want, be willing to do everything to be able to make sure that happened. But make sure this, your path has put you right where you are. And if you ain't happy with that, you got to change the path, right? And so it's all, again, your approach to anything is everything, right? We said that. And you know, it's a lot of alone time. If you're doing things that are going to be separate you from everybody else, like in terms of results, you want to be the best ever. Well, guess what? Your treasure map has to be the best ever. And that's what I leave with everybody with.
Great. Great. Well, I'll tell you what, as we wrap up another enlightening episode of the Donut Kicker Coverage Podcast, we want to express our gratitude once again for everyone tuning in. And remember, as they say, sharing is caring. So please share this podcast with a couple of friends. And don't forget to shower us with those 5-star reviews and the likes and comments, because your engagement really does fuel our passion for delivering quality and timely content. So this is Coach Nolan once again signing off. And until next time, keep striving for excellence. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day. Chris, thanks very much for joining us. Have an awesome week and safe travels to you, young man.
Appreciate you, Mark. Thank you for having me.